morning. What we're dealing with right here is a tree, salt cedar. It's a tree-like shrub. And then we have the beetle, a biological control. And the question is how much of an effect the spiders have on that biological control. Just to introduce salt cedar a little bit, Mary did that earlier. But it was introduced in the early 1800s as an erosion control for railroads as well as river systems. And it has become a major pest in the Southwest in particular because of riparian areas are of such great importance for resource, but throughout the Western United States. It can survive drought, fire. It is resilient for saline soils. And the major problem with salt cedar has become a major monotypic stand. It can outcompete native vegetation. Normal control measures, such as mechanical and chemical, have had mixed success. Okay, so what we have here is a biological control. This Dirabda elongata, it's a chrysomelid native of the Eurasian area that the tree is from. And the fortunate thing about it is it eats the tree in all life stages. Three instars and the adult. It pupates in the ground just below the tree. And it has done very well at many of the sites that this biological control has been introduced. However, in some of the southwestern states, there's been some mixed success. And there's different reasons for that, including a latitude gradient. But one reason could be predation, native predators in the ecosystem feeding on this beetle. And we know this in particular already from studies that have shown that Zelus, the assassin bug, has taken down these beetle adults in field conditions. And so now we investigate the role spiders, native spiders, can play in the predation of these beetles. They're all predators. They have different capture techniques depending on web structure or ambush prey technique behavior. And because they have such a wide range of morphological size, whether it's a 2 to 5 millimeter or a 25 millimeter spider, they have the advantage of possibly taking down not only larvae but adults. Previous literature in cotton as well as pecans and many sources state that spiders are a great resource in predation of anything that's in high number on an area. So the objectives for my project have been to determine what spider species are on the salt cedar tree, which inhabit the tree, and secondly, determine the risk factor these spider species would have on the success of this biocontrol agent. Field sites have included a few different places in the West, including Pueblo, Colorado, and places in Texas. This is an aerial photo of my main site in Big Spring, Texas. That's near the center of the state. Most of my work is field-oriented, and lab work is mostly included cup studies. So what we did was we did a spider survey, where we visited twice a month each of our field sites. And we then surveyed the tree by visual observation first on a compass direction north, south, east, and west around the tree, which also helps so that we don't double count spiders that were walking around. And that's done for 2 minutes a side. And then we also do a beat bucket method, low, medium, and high for that tree using that beat bucket, where low is the lowest 2 feet of a tree, the high is the highest 2 feet of the tree, upper canopy sampling, and then the medium is what's in between. I'm not going to go into detail for this talk of all the data that I have from the field work, but what we have are the results. This is just a list of the spider families that we found on salt cedar. So what we have are secondary candidates, spiders that are in low number on the tree and considered low risk just for that reason alone. For instance, one of the secondary candidates, Lycosidae wolf spiders, are predominant on the ground, but they do not seem to inhabit the tree in any large numbers. Usually we'd find one or two in the lower 2 feet of a tree, but never any higher. And remember, we're worried about the beetle, which is on the foliar green region of the tree. The primary candidates on the left, however, were in high number and were seen many times in field actually eating the beetle, and these are the ones that we want to continue investigating. 2006, we tried to just break up the experiments into two sections, spiders that could eat potentially the larvae and spiders that could potentially eat the adult. We used Actinidae, a very small spider. It's a 2 to 5 millimeters in length. We thought we just had one species, a genus Dictina species, but it actually has turned out to be four, very numerous on the tree, the most numerous. We could have maybe 40 to 50 of the spider on salt cedar. None of the experiments got off the ground. No real luck with cup studies with the larvae, sensitive larvae, and finicky spiders. This is a work that would have to go on for later. But we did have some very good luck with large spiders in cup studies. The Araneidae, the orb weavers, those are the ones that make those traditional flat orb webs that you think of for spiders usually. The genus Metapyra and Neoscona both fed on, showed to feed on beetles in cups, as well as the funnel web spiders, the one on the bottom there, Agilinidae, Agilinopsis. Very large spider, usually a spider commonly known in the grass or in the lower regions of the salt cedar tree. This one also fed on the beetle adults in cup studies. So this is good. This is that way we can move forward with those spiders. A lot of people working with salt cedar have mentioned jumping spiders as a potential predator of Dirabda elongata. And for good reason. They're very ornamental, very pretty spiders generally that you can really catch them by eye fairly easily. And there has been literature showing that they can eat larvae, depending on what species we're talking about. So we did one of many adult experiments for the beetle with these spiders. Phidippus audax was used. It's very common. It's a late season spider. It's very large and diverse habitat and diverse feeding structure, so it can eat many different prey. We didn't have too much luck of showing that in the cups it fed, but we did have many deaths. Jumping spiders do not like being in small containers. They like to wander about in large regions of parameter. They may have shown aggression just being in such a small container. We did find two cups that actually had beetles that had puncture wounds on them, but closer inspection by our spider specialist, Dr. Dave Richmond, he believes that there was no digestion of material of the spider. So it appears that they don't have a pleasant taste. That is already known in Chrysomelidae and some other species, and it's possible that such a finicky spider that can wander about like jumping spiders, they do not favor this prey item. Now going to the orb weavers that we did find from 2006 cup studies to feed on the beetle adults, we used four common genera that were found on the salt cedar trees, including the genus Neoscona, which ate every single beetle adult that we threw at it. All cups, all beetle adults in the control cups survived. A similar study here, it's just we got similar results for the genus Neoscona. However, it's also good to point out that the genus Metapyra, as well as the genus Argiope, do have some potential for predation on this beetle, this biocontrol. And also that green region that was highlighted here is important to show that male Neosconas did not show any predation on the beetle. That's not surprising. They're smaller and they tend to wander about compared to some of these females who set up large webs, larger webs than any of the males, and hold up shop there to collect any of these prey, which generally fly into the webs. We then come to one of the last experiments that was done to just try to narrow it down even further for this genus Neoscona, which is the most successful on feeding not only in the field but also in cup studies of this biocontrol agent. What we did is we took 1 gallon containers and just let them star feed and create their webs in these containers, and I placed the adults into the webs, whether it was 2 adults, 4 adults, 6 or further, to see how many they can feed over a 6-day duration. And they kind of topped out at about 4 adults, and it seems like they just got full and they're happy to be like that until they're hungry again. Did use these for a later experiment the following week, and they did feed on beetles again. So it looks to be a semi-appropriate average to kind of go on for further experiments for next season. Just to summarize, jumping spiders, although very diverse, the most diverse spider family on the tree, did not show any significant attack. Well, they showed some attack, but no evidence of feeding of the beetle adult. Neoscona, the orb weaver family that was commonly found out in the field to actually feed on this beetle adult, showed well in experiments, and we're averaging about 4 to 6 adults out in the field to be potentially fed on by the spider. Larva experiments were inconclusive at this point. Just like to finish with some concluding statements about the success that this beetle could have in areas even with Neoscona. It appears that Neoscona arabesca is the most common there, and we do not feel that even that one could impact because of that just a 4 a week fed on by the beetle.
We need to stop there and have a question. Any questions? Any questions?
Yeah.
In your field sampling, did you do any samples at night? Because some people claim that lycosids are climbing up into vegetation at night.
No, we did not, because lycosids weren't found to be high during the daytime. We did not survey any time at night. It was during the day that we found most of our jumping spiders and the orb weavers, so that's the one that we focused on.
Yeah. What do you think the potential is for lycosids to impact Diarrhoea in the pupal stage or adult overwintering stage?
Yeah, that's a good question. We did look at the wolf spiders on the pupal stage on the ground, but since we're mostly interested in the foliated areas of the tree where the defoliation occurs, we're mostly interested in the spiders that inhabited those regions.
If we have to move on,
okay.